All right, cool. So welcome back to the Humans of Grappling podcast. It's been a while, and I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not, of course, it's not my day job. It's not a priority. I can only really handle three things is my relationship with my wife, my job, and jiu-jitsu. Like, those are the three things that I can like reliably juggle, and everything will be okay. But yeah, anything on top of that is, I don't know, a little suspect. So, anyways, I think I'm just gonna do like, I don't know, maybe it's a weekly show and it's just me talking for 30 minutes or so, and every so often we'll have guests. Because like coordinating with guests is really hard, and like, yes, in-person podcasts are much better, but it's so it's yeah, it's hard to coordinate with times and whatever. I don't know. I'm just also just kind of lazy. I just don't want to. I don't know. This is a hobby. This is a side project. It's not a focus, but I do want to put my ideas out there. I think that's it's just easiest to just kind of talk and let things play out. Rather than writing is another way I get things out. And the entire reason why I'm doing this is right now is because I'm bored. Is because I'm out of jiu-jitsu for a little bit. Like I came back from so we were in France for a month, France and Italy for a month. Came back last week, trained 6 days in a row, and of course I get like and I was like still like jet lagged, and I wasn't getting great sleep, and I got sick. And so I'm recovering from that now, and I also have like a little like kind of rash on my chin, so that's why I shaved. And yeah, so I get like a double whammy right when I come back from a month break of training. So yeah, that's great. But anyways, this is when I usually have just this desire to create, because jiu-jitsu is my primary method of creation and my primary hobby of creation, I guess. And when I don't do it, I have this gap. I have this time in the morning that I'm awake, but I'm not doing anything with it. So, yeah, I'll probably shoot for like 30 minutes for this episode here because I have a meeting at 9. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to recap where the fuck I've been and let everybody know that hey, this I may like reboot this in like a different way in terms of like Humans of Grappling is still a catchy title, but it may just be me like talking more or less weekly or so, because I know I can carve out 30 minutes a week, like that's easy. And then low production quality, like this. I'm just recording on my webcam. If you guys even like watch, will want to watch this because it's not super interesting. It's just me in my office. But yeah, it's just me, microphone, and it's just easy upload. I'm not going to edit this at all. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of talk about things I've been thinking about. I think that's. I don't know, the best way for me to digest them, crystallize them, summarize them, is to have to talk about them. Like have to be able to try to teach it or relay what I've learned. Is a great way to learn it better for myself. So just kind of what the month off in France and Italy was like. It's interesting that weekdays, like the days of the week, are a construct, it seems like. Because I had no idea what the day of the week was for most of the trip. Like the days just kind of bled together. And I think that's the length of time that everyone needs to take off is a month or at least 2 weeks in a row, and just get a sense for like what life is like outside of like your normal 9 to 5 day job and your normal routines. And this is actually a very like ecological type of idea, is that it's fuck, I forget the actual term. Yeah, I don't know. It's damn it. Oh well. I'll remember it. I'll describe it, and hopefully it comes to me. It's something like interference. Like it's a pattern interrupt. It's like you, like, since everything's in terms of social media now, it's a pattern interrupt. So it's when you scroll your feed and you see something different than what you're used to seeing, and that makes you pay attention to it, right? So if you interrupt your pattern of living, then you notice it more. You physically move yourself outside of your comfort zone of the, I don't know, like I have a very structured, ordered life. I wake up, I drink my coffee, go to jiu-jitsu, wrestle with my friends, come back, shower, work, do things in the evening, like go whatever, get groceries or hang out with my wife or whatever. Like there's a handful of things I do. And all of it involves physically moving between like three different places. Like driving mostly, right? And physically moving yourself from one side of the planet to the other, and of course the flat earthers, jiu-jitsu guys who are gonna listen to this are gonna be like, oh, it's one side of the whatever it is, sphere, or not sphere, but the plane, whatever you choose to like. Whatever you choose to believe it is, I'm a spearhead. I'm sorry, globe head, a globalist maybe. I don't know. Physically moving yourself, like we're meant to like experience things in ourselves, right? Like we that's all we have. That's a very ecological dynamics thing. Is like it's you and your environment, and all you have is like you interacting with stuff. That's all there is. And physically moving yourself to a different place, whether that's, I don't know, to you going to the East Coast if you live on the West Coast or of the United States, or if like what we did is fly to France and live in whatever, visit 5, 8 different cities maybe total, like, or 5 in Paris, 3 in Italy. So just get outside of your normal comfort zone, and then even better if it's in a culture you don't like really know or really understand or even understand the language. Of course, all this is coming from like a very privileged position. I know that I understand that I have the disposable income to do this. I acknowledge that people don't have the means to even like live where they're at. So all this with that like qualifier is that if you're at the point where you are like getting by and you are have the means to do so, I suggest that you do so. And that this is another like The rich get richer kind of thing. It's like the if you have the means to broaden your horizons and expand your consciousness, there's more you can make more connections between different things, and you can now like things compile on top of each other. Things exponentially grow. There are certain things that just curve up into the right, and this is one of them. Is the more experience you have outside of your normal everyday 9 to 5 grind or whatever you do, the more diverse set of experiences and perspectives and languages and cultures that you know, then you can make more connections and you can find something that you can you can find a gap in the market. You can, like, for me was go-go grappling. Like, I knew technology side, what technology, like I have a technology perspective and a grappling perspective, and I saw, hey, there was like no you could produce instructionals, but there was no like dedicated like site for any grappler to make their own membership content site. So I made Go Grappling, and I mean, of course, we had to shut it down because it wasn't an actual need, or it was a. We were just a little early, and now there's like other companies that are filling that void, like right now, who are doing the same thing, but they're actually funded and actually have marketing and actually have a big grappling name behind them. Like, so Athlete's Ocean is started by Jason Nolf, and they have better features, bigger marketing, whatever. Like, they're just doing it better, and congrats to them. So, but it's that perspective of like being able to combine different views of the world together and seeing what the intersection between all those different worlds are and who you are. This isn't a unique idea to me. Like I've read this multiple different places where it's like you are the intersection of all the different experiences you've had. You are the intersection of all the different perspectives you hold, and you're the expert of you, right? Like your job. You are the perfect candidate for your own, like being your own person, being your own content creator or whatever, right? So, anyways, where was I going? Yeah, so like the more this is a power law dynamics type of thing where if you get a foothold in society, and you can like start making things compounding interest, compounding experiences, compounding even though we have linear time, right? Like we have 24 hours in the day, everyone has the same, quote unquote, the same 24 hours in the day, even though we don't. Everybody experiences time, the experiences the same value of time, the same quantity of time. We all experience the same seconds, but what we do with those seconds differentiates. And again, like people don't have the same 24 hours in the day. Like somebody with more responsibilities, they have much more limited time than somebody who is just smoking weed on somebody's couch and is bumming and being a jiu-jitsu bum and wants to be a world champion, but they're not doing anything else, right? Like they're all their chips are on in jiu-jitsu and becoming a world champion, or somebody who's diversified, who has a bunch of different interests, and the their chit they have a lot of different bets in a lot of different places. Like that's sort of my perspective, or like my views. Like I have, like, I went to college. I didn't go all in on grappling even though I kind of wanted to, but the kind of the computer nerd in me like enjoys programming, and I enjoy the stability, the financial stability that comes from programming, and it's a very like I would be doing it if it wasn't as lucrative, but it's also just a stable job, and like I enjoy doing it. So I do that 8 hours a day instead of trying to like figure out how to put together money being a professional grappler, right? And so GoGo Grappling kind of got spun out of that. Is like, oh, how do I help people make a professional living out of grappling? But it seems like there's more opportunities for people doing that. So, why I'm jumping around is like I'm intentionally showing like this, this aspect of ecological training or ecological perspective, ecological dynamics, is that if you really know something, you can just jump around and just kind of go from here to there. Like there isn't like a set script, right? You don't have to, even though like people will be able to understand you better if like things start from A and go to B and then go to C, D, E, F, etc. I find that it's, at least with conversations, it's interesting because people jump around. People ask this question, then they respond with this answer, which leads the other person to ask another question. To like, it's nonlinear. There isn't that flow of going back and forth and between, freely going between all these different topics, is like one aspect or one skill of really knowing something, and you being able to interact with the knowledge or your, I would argue, just skill, the skill of talking about something and being able to go in at any different point and talk about it, that shows mastery of that. But it's also another skill to put together a coherent story that goes from A to Z and walks you through step by step of what is happening. But that's, so that's the ecological perspective would argue that's not a, like, that makes you feel good, but it doesn't make you like actually learn the material any better. Because how we engage with stuff is by fucking around and finding out. It's like that. It's that chart of that guy on the YouTube video or the Instagram video, the reel of like, the more you fuck around, the more you find out. And it's a linear, a line, which is just a scale of one or whatever, right? So a one-to-one ratio of fucking around and finding out. So that's all of learning, is how do you make it your own? How do you internalize it? And this book that I read by Rob Gray, I've read a couple of his books now. The first one is How We Learn to Move. And the other book, I don't have the title in front of me, but it's a little bit more technical, and you probably should learn, like, read the first book first in order to like get what he's saying. So it's kind of like the whole idea is that we are animals. Ecology is like you think about birds and trees and like animals and plants, and that's kind of how the traditional or like how we've heard the term ecology before. But we are animals, and we live in this is a treehouse. It's made out of wood, but it's just fancier, right? Like this is a literal, it's made out of trees. It's made out of wood and stands high in the air, right? Like this is a human treehouse where, and we interact with it. We are bodies in a system, and we are constrained by certain things. We are constrained by what our body can do, and that's what this book is kind of like concerned about, is like what games lead to certain functions within the game. So like if you have what he explores a lot of different sports, but say a soccer game, like the field is so big and you have 11 players or whatever. What happens if you shrink the field down? Like you in practice, like practice a quote unquote small-sided game, and you focus on just offense. Like you play half court or whatever, or basketball, you play half court. What arises out of that? You don't have fast breaks. You don't have certain that limits certain behaviors. So that's called constraints. So that limits your perspective on how you can play the game. And so that informs what you see was what you see that is possible in the game. Those are called affordances. So your actions that you can take, that you can see, oh, pass the ball to the left or dribble to the right. What you see is available to you, invitations to move, those are called affordances. So we have the same thing. Like I learned the word affordances actually like 10 years ago in college in our UX design class. So everything we see on the smartphone has been designed to give us affordances. Like the icons are clickable. We feel like we can tap them. We feel like we can interact with them. We can push in and do different things with the phone because it's designed for us to like interact with it. It's designed for us to move with it. So that in itself is like your personal device is an ecological world in itself, right? And for me, I'm a fucking addict to Instagram. Like I just love scrolling and seeing new content and seeing things pop up. And I have to like delete that affordance. I have to delete, get rid of Instagram for me to like not spend all day on it, right? So these things are designed, programmed in order to get us to do things in a well it, the, like in a very addictive type of way. Like that's the same thing like Instagram reels. What does that look like? Like slot machine reels. We're designed to like anticipate, and the whole idea of like we're the spaced repetition. Like we love it when things aren't like a constant positive. Like it sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative, sometimes like it, there's a we're not rewarded all the time, but it's that space between the reward and the next reward, and if it's variable, like that gets us hooked. Like the psychology studies have confirmed this all over. So anyways, so that's all that's like related to this ecological approach of like, hey, how do we, this perspective of the world, of that we are all we can tell, or let's just analyze from ourselves, and everything else is our environment, including other people. So for grappling, the other person, like if you're grappling with them, has affordances. You see a way to guard pass. You see, oh, I'm gonna knee cut to the left, or Toreando to the right, or oh, their head is low, I'm gonna guillotine, or I'm gonna snap them down, or I'm gonna take their back. Like you see all these different invitations to these different pathways to move. So for me, and I actually have started reading this third kind of ecological dynamics book. It's called The Constraints-Led Approach. And it's like more of a textbook. and it's like more technical. But like within the first few pages, it was like they call this a grand unified theory of learning. And I called it that before I even like read the book. And like this just makes sense to me as a way to learn about everything in the world. So being able to like jump around and fuck around with different things, and this is how I learn programming, is like I can't. Yes, it's nice to learn like the baseline rules of the game, but I have to be able to interact with it and understand what's going on and like see cause and effect. Rob Gray has his own podcast called the Perception Action Podcast. So you perceive by acting. You learn by doing. That's the Cal Poly motto, that my alma mater, the college I went to. They say learn by doing. So perceive by acting. Like you, perception action coupling is a key concept in this like ecological approach, is that you, well, I gotta go to a meeting soon, but I think I'll just continue recording these different things. I'll put them all together and upload them. So, okay. Sorry for the non-linear kind of scatterbrained first episode here, or first episode back off of a hiatus. I just have a lot of things that I want to talk about, and have read a lot of things that I am excited about. So I kind of left off the last part about perception action coupling and different kind of concepts within the ecological dynamics, ecological approach, whatever you want to call it. And the way we, and I was talking about constraints within games. So like constraining, changing the different constraints of, say, traditional games like soccer and basketball and whatever. So we kind of have shadows of this in jiu-jitsu as well, and we kind of have very toy, we have toy versions of this. We have situational sparring. We, the traditional approach of jiu-jitsu has the most useful thing it's produced is situational sparring. I don't think drilling moves is all that helpful. I've always been kind of an anti-driller, and early anti-drillers like Kit Dale kind of also have influenced me in that way as well. So because you need to like do these things under pressure, under duress, under a live environment, and that's how you pressure test it. That's how you learn. Grappling, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, judo, all these things need to happen in real time against somebody who is really resisting you. So these constraints, thinking in terms of constraints, is sort of like, is bounding areas, is bounding what is possible. And in our whole world is like this. Like we, my house is bounded by the four walls or so. What, like each room is bounded by four walls and a ceiling and a floor, right? Like it, I'm in a box right now. And so are our actions, and so are. So like that's our environment, and that's what I can act and interact with. Like I have posters and stuff behind me, and I can look at them, and each one has its own like gradient of affordance to it. Like which one do I want to look at? I don't know, whatever one that pops out, that speaks to me, that pops out to me right now. Like you might be looking over my shoulder and seeing my football jersey in the back, or you might see Adventure Time, or you might see Star Wars, or you might like whatever one that you notice first, or you might see my California license plate, like the whatever pops out to you, that is what you're tending toward. That's it. You're accepting the invitation to the affordance. So invitations are affordances. Rob Gray kind of makes this analogy of affordances are pink envelopes, hot pink envelopes in a sea of like white envelopes. So you get a big bag of mail and you see a hot pink envelope for invitation to a dinner or a wedding or whatever, right? Like you, that sticks out to you. So certain things stick out to us as, hey, we should interact with this, or we should at least consider interacting with this. And like everything has affordances, like everything has a value internal to our brain. Like we can't like access this directly. We don't have the values or anything like that of, oh, how much more affordance do I have looking at my football jersey versus the Star Wars poster, right? Like we don't have direct access to it, but we don't have the actual values or the neuron levels or whatever, but we can just see what happens. We can see, oh yeah, I tend to look over here versus over here, or I tend to look over here. And it changes over time. So getting this back to jiu-jitsu is you have your favorite techniques. You figure out a handful of techniques that you like to use. I like the body lock passing. I see that all the time because I see the affordance of being able to get my hands around their waist and pulling them in. Of course, like somebody who knows that's coming has their affordance. When I do that, they can double over and sweep me. And this happened to me recently this last weekend multiple times. Like we just swept each other back and forth. Like he knew the body lock was coming, he swept me, and then I swept him with like a butterfly sweep or something back. And we just kind of went back and forth. So it's dynamic. It is what I'm saying is it's ecological dynamics. These affordances change over time in real time, depending on your environment, depending on the state of your environment. So for example, my affordance is to continue to talk into this microphone and record this podcast. But if say, what is it? What's the movie? Donnie Darko. If something pulled a Donnie Darko, what is it called? That's just the name of the movie. If something pulled a Donnie Darko and like something crashed through my ceiling, my affordance would no longer be talking into this microphone, staring into this camera. It would be addressing whatever came through the ceiling, right? Like it changes, affordances change over time. So the constraints kind of point us towards the affordances that we can look at. Like right now, the constraints of my walls are pointing me in towards looking at things within my office, right? Versus like if I was outside, there the constraints are open. Like if I go up to my rooftop deck, the constraints are wide open. Like I can see for miles. I can see to the other side of town. I can see to the mountain. I could like that's there's we have different like spectrums of constraints that we enjoy. We like variation as humans. So these are physical constraints that I'm talking about, but there's also mental constraints. There's like, there's a famous clip of Kanye West. He says, if you yell at your kids to like, don't jump on the coffee table, then like your world becomes coffee tables. Like you're, what is like you're being told not to do things. You're being told don't do that, don't do this, and your world becomes constrained. And everything he talks about coffee tables as a abstract concept of like, hey, your world becomes, hey, you have to be directed towards something. You have to go get a safe job, get a 9-to-5 job, and do all these things. You have to fall in line and do X, Y, and Z because your parents told you to or whatever. Like, so I think that's a very like visual way of saying, hey, all these things are coffee tables. So like there's coffee tables in your life of that you're not supposed to jump on. You're not supposed to touch, or you're not supposed to like break through these things. You have to like kind of be funneled towards something. So I think that different way of like, he sees that, like Kanye talked about ecological dynamics, whether he knew it or not, probably didn't, but, he was talking about constraints, like the world constrains you. So he probably thinks about how the world constrains him in different ways, whether they're real or not, or whatever. If he's fully, I don't know. I'm just going to get off the Kanye subject, but it's just a, interesting way to think about reality. Like there's physical constraints, but there's also mental constraints, and it's just us interacting with our environment and us learning about our environment, through doing. And like I said in the last segment, learn by doing. Like this is how I've always learned, and that's how the college I went to, how we learned, is just by doing lab projects, by, hey, go and do this thing, go into, whether it be the chemistry lab or the computer science lab, and go and program this thing, or the physics lab, go and like run this experiment, set it up in this way and figure out, hook these different, my favorite were the electrical engineering labs, like hook this circuit up and see what happens and check out the voltage and check out the current and check out these different things. And then you blend the theory that you are supposed to be seeing with the practicality. Okay, how close is it? Does this match up? Does this make sense? I'm not saying that there's learning from instructionals or learning from, to bring it back into jiu-jitsu land, learning from books. Like I'm trying to read more books than ever now. Like I'm trying to read, I've got like a stack of books here. I'll get into Taleb in a little bit and how that's also a perspective shifter. But I'm trying to consume more long form stuff. And maybe this is how I jump into Taleb, is that he said in this book, Fooled by Randomness, in 2005, that you shouldn't be watching the news. that the news is mostly noise. And if something truly important is happening in the world, you'll hear about it. Somebody will tell you, or it'll make its way to, he says it'll make its way to his ears. Of course, he wasn't talking about smartphones or anything like that back then. But he's totally right. It's like Instagram is just news. It's all noise versus signal. Signal is like actually useful information that you can perceive and act upon, that you can like mess around with, that you can like actually get to something useful. Versus like noise is like, this is like signal processing and whatnot, and statistics, and they use these terms, signal and noise. But that sounds an awful lot like affordances. Like, things have high affordances, but are they useful affordances? And that's how we can set our constraints. So, like, for me, Instagram has a high affordance. Like, I want to go there and scroll through all the colorful images and the reels and the whatever, but it's low signal, right? It's high noise. Same thing with the news, or same thing with just whatever other media you consume on a daily basis. It's probably not that important. Like, it's just something that we were told as kids, hey, this is important to, like, read the news or whatever. And of course, this sounds like a right wing talking point or whatever, the fake news media or whatever. But yes, it's important to some degree to, like, understand in real time what's going on, but you don't have to be glued to it. You don't have to, like, if it's something really important, it'll come to you, right? It'll find its way somehow. But you should instead, like, be putting your time and effort into things that have long-term value, that have proven themselves as long-term valuable sources of information, like books. Like, I have six, yeah, entirely too many books on my desk that I'm reading through a little bit by bit. But I did read, I did finish a couple books over the vacation just because I wanted to, like, extract that information. I wanted to extract that long form information, not, like, actually, like, sit with it and marinate in it, versus, like, these fleeting memes. Like, you swipe and you think about a meme for, like, 10 seconds and you swipe away and you go to the next one, like, it's a constant, like, fire hose of all of these different ideas, and you don't really sit with them and think. If you read a book, the affordance is to continue on the author's train of thought and to really sit with whatever they're talking about. And they take you through a path of how they're thinking. So it allows you to really sit with the ideas, and, like, it's a to put it in social media terms, it's a long comment thread, basically, but it's a one-sided comment thread of just this person laying out their argument pro or against something. And you really get to see what that person is like by their writing. So in this book by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, Fooled by Randomness, he kind of brings up what that most of our lives are more random than we think. That what we may perceive as skill may just be kind of random outcomes. The things beyond our control happen, and they just so happen to break in our way. So, of course, his example, he was or still is a trader. So, like, a market derivatives trader, makes money from stock market and other things like that. So he says, yeah, like, anybody could be, like, lucky in the stock market. Anybody can buy and sell things. And given that enough times, given, say, like, a monkey's on a typewriter, if one particular monkey bangs out a Shakespeare poem, then you would assume that, oh, that monkey is, like, special. And you would wait for the monkey to, like, bang out the next Shakespeare play or whatever, and you would be waiting for a long time after that. Like, there's segments where luck, there's periods of time where, like, you can mistake luck for skill, and given enough long enough time frame, you can a longer and longer time frame, you can see, hey, he wasn't just lucky, or he was just lucky during that period. So this is the problem with a lot of things. And he contrasts that, like traders, like you can see anybody can get rich really quick given a short enough time span. You only look at like a year of a trader's history, and he made a bunch of money within 1 year, but then all the other years he like lost his shirt, right? Versus a dentist, like he uses this example in the book. Dentist like doesn't get there by chance. He doesn't graduate school and drill teeth by chance. Like there's like a long process for becoming a dentist, and a lot of like qualifiers along the way, a lot of like tests along the way to see if this guy's really good or not, like rubbing up against actual reality, whether he successfully drills a tooth or not. And all those thousands of times that he drilled teeth throughout all his, say, dentists with years and years of experience, then yeah, he must be pretty well proven, and he's probably pretty reliable, versus a trader who got one thing right one time. Like that's not a reliable source of information. Like that there's different ways that we perceive the world and like perceive time, and it's like, oh, that guy called the 08 stock market crash. Well, there's always people calling for things at different times, and people have been calling for it for calling things for years. And people look at Michael Burry as like the, because he's a well-known published case of the Big Short movie fame. He got it right, got the 2008 market crash right, and now people look at him like he's some kind of, like, yes, he had to look into whatever bet that he made deeply, and like had like a lot of conviction in it, but there was probably also like many other people who like bet against him at the same time. And he's called many other tried to call many other different market crashes ever since, and he's been mostly off on all of them. This is just me speaking from people who've told me these things, who know a lot more than I do. So just because he was the lucky monkey who banged on the typewriter that one time, people look to him as this god of calling market crashes. Because this next book that I'm reading, I'm still in the middle of it, or I just started it basically, is Black Swans. So the Black Swan by, again, Taleb. And he's saying that history moves through major events that have never been seen before. And that's like he uses 9/11 as an example, because we've never seen before planes flying into buildings. So like you can't predict that, or you can't, based on all the previous information, you can't predict that. You can't predict the future. So same thing with like the namesake of the Black Swan theory or whatever, is that you could empirically observe all of the swans in the world and they're all white. And then you say you may be tempted to say, oh, all swans are white, because all the ones that we've seen so far are white. But then a black swan comes along, and that ruins your model of the world. That completely, all you know is that, oh, there, this new thing came along and upended my understanding of what swans were, right? So it's, you can empirically see, hey, this thing has always been this way, or will always be this way, just because I've seen it always be this way. And for certain things, it's like, Really? Or is it really going to be that? Like, for example, the US stock market, it always goes up into the right. Over, you just zoom out enough, it always goes up into the right. And it's like, really? Like, are we sure about that? Like, that, because that, all we have are data points, right? Like, that's the. And no matter whatever black swan examples that we've seen in the stock market, like the COVID pandemic, like it just rocketed down. It's just, yeah, it's interesting to like, it's a contrarian type of thinking of like re-examining things. It's like, okay, what do we actually know here? Is it because these things, is it just because we've observed all these things before and this is just how it's always been? Or can like something that has never happened before happen and then fuck up everything, right? So that's something that I'm trying to like. Like I still have a whole book to go through, so I need to do that. But that's kind of the premise is like randomness. Our lives are more random than we would like to think. And we take credit for skill, quote unquote skill, but it may be more just dumb luck. We were in the right place at the right time, and things worked out great. And I kind of see this in my own life, and it's like, why did I get born in this great family that with stable upper middle class mobility and like I went to college, and I have this interest in this computers thing, and oh yeah, it just just so happened to be a very useful skill. And a very like very supportive whatever career, a very lucrative career, right? Like it's hard. Don't get me wrong. Like I'm not like discounting the work aspect and the but at the same time, like. How were my neurons wired in such a way that I kept through, like I kept going down this path, like the affordance of continuing down this path of programming. I get this like twisted little like joy of when I figure out something, right? Like that's the dopamine hit of like, oh, I figured out this bug, what was wrong with this line of code or whatever. And it's just like boom. Like that makes me want to continue to do it. Same thing with like jujitsu, right? Like there you have to kind of enjoy getting your ass kicked in order to continue coming for 6 months before you get your first tap, right? Before you do anything to somebody else, you are getting just beaten up. And you have to kind of enjoy that. You kind of have to enjoy the process of getting beat up and the process of learning, which is learning, right? Would like, of course, I say beat up, but like you're figuring out all the different ways that somebody can isolate your arm or your neck or your leg. And, take it home with them, and you have to defend against that. And if you don't know that, then you tap, right? Or if you, it's completely unaware, you tap. So, yeah. So, anyways, that's why I say this ecological dynamics. I just see all these different things, and I like what from what I'm reading, I'm seeing these different perspectives, and I see how they come together. I see. And I'm pretty convinced that ecological dynamics are this like grand unified theory of learning. And it's just how we learn. It's what is underneath everything. Just even like reading, right? You have the constraint of a book, right? It's there's pages, you read within the pages, and you go from word to word. And the affordance is to go to the next word, right? Like you want to pick up more information. You want to try to read into the author's thoughts, what they're trying to tell you. You want to continue reading. You want to continue parsing out what their line of reasoning, right? So you're moving, your hands are holding the book, your eyes are moving across the page. So when Rob Gray like wrote How We Learn to Move, it's like, I think it's a backdoor, or at least for me, I don't know. He may just view it solely in the context of, he may only view it solely through the context of athletics and movement. But for me, it's like a grander scale thing. It's a like, hey, everything, we're alive, we're moving, I'm using my hands to talk, we're sitting, we're keeping ourselves upright. We are embodied. We are mind body. That's not just the company based out of San Luis Obispo. It's like we like to think we're all in our heads. Like we, like our person is all in our heads, but we are embodied. We are throughout ourselves, throughout our arms and legs, if we have them, or whatever. Like we store different things in different areas. And we use our whole body to, we are using our whole body all the time, even if we aren't consciously thinking about it. That my legs are still doing something right now. They're kind of supporting me, leaning over a little bit, right? Even though I'm not really using them. I'm not actively, say, using them in guard or running or whatever, right? But they're still doing something. So anyways, I think to finish up on the Talebian thought is that jiu-jitsu is not random, right? That this is like, it's a hard truth. We can't be fooled by randomness in jiu-jitsu. Like the guy who knows, or girl, who knows the most jiu-jitsu or is better at jiu-jitsu is going to submit the other person, right? Or at least win by points, the competition. But whatever it is, it's not random. It's not a random occurrence. We try to, your movements compared to somebody else may be variable, like that. This goes into ecological approach. So see, I'm melding the Talebian thought and the ecological thought together, is like, because ecological is trying to kind of tamper down variability, even though we like it accounts for variability. It's not, hey, we want to do this one specific move in this one specific way, in this perfect idealized way. That's not how I think about jiu-jitsu, but that's the traditional line of thinking. But the ecological way is, hey, here's, whenever you get a figure four arm lock, a Kimura or whatever, the principles, the concepts are, okay, get the hand to the mat and, keep it behind their back. Like that's simple enough, right? Like you have these constraints that you're trying to build towards. So you're trying to tamper down all the random shit that they can do with their arm with a Kimura. You have a Kimura on and they're defending and they're trying to move their arm all around in any which way. You're trying to reduce the randomness. You're trying to reduce the variability, and you have skill in doing that by putting it behind their back and then securing it for a Kimura finish, right? All the various little constraints that you use to put them in a terrible position, right? Okay, so that kind of bridges, hopefully, hopefully it makes sense in some kind of weird way. But yeah, I think I'll try to record these like once a week or so, and I can just ramble on. And this will kind of keep me accountable in terms of like, I need to read new shit in order to like think about new things and not just be a broken record. So let me know what you guys think, and see you next time.